This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Rappaport to the rescue with award-winning animal advocate, best-selling author, journalist, and pet products creator, Jill Rappaport.
Hi, I'm Jill Rappaport, and welcome to this holiday edition of Rappaport to the Rescue. I love this time of year. It is so beautiful out here in the Hamptons. It's decorated everywhere you go, the Christmas lights and all of the music and the festivities. It's such a special time of year. We all feel so blessed to have people in our lives that we love so much, and especially for our fur angels. I wake up every day and I literally look at them and I say thank you as I hug each one of my doggies, and I go outside and I pet and kiss my horses. Those are truly my blessings. But it's this time of year that animal welfare is truly in a very challenging and dire state. This is the time where so many shelters are filled to the brim, and it's worse now than it's been in decades. It really is quite horrific now. And for me, I knew I had to do something about this, because the thought of any animal not being in a loving home is just heartbreaking. But especially at holiday time, when we're all gathered with the ones we love, those animals deserve and need to have the same. So I started this wonderful campaign last year at Southampton Animal Shelter called A Home for the Holidays and After. I added an after because I still have one dog from a year ago that I was featuring that was a year old deaf pity mix, and he's still sitting there. He was adopted and returned 3 times. So I now add it after, because I started the new campaign again with my underdogs from Southampton Animal Shelter, the seniors, the pits, and the special needs. And I am determined, like last year, where I placed 16 of those dogs in the most wonderful, loving homes and very challenging situations. 2 were Siberian Huskies that were 8 years old and had to go together, and a wonderful family took them both. So I know I can do it, and I know you can help me do it. I encourage you, I beg you, to go to your local shelter and volunteer your time, make a donation, walk a dog. Please foster. Foster is God's work. You are the mediator between hell and heaven. And then, of course, adopt. You can make a difference. I'm trying to do what I can with my local shelter. You all can make a difference, especially this time of year. So thank you so much for listening to me and hopefully understanding the need to protect our fur angels at the shelters and all across this country where so many animals are languishing. Now, coming up today, I have such an exciting interview. I have a little crush on this guy, I've got to admit. If you happen to watch Turner Classic Movies, and who doesn't? You know that cute host, Ben Mankiewicz. He is smart. He is suave. To add to another reason I think he's so fabulous, he's a huge rescuer. So when we come back, we're going to chat with Ben Mankiewicz from Turner Classic Movies. Stay tuned.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Want to know who the latest trendsetters are in Hollywood? How about Irish setters? Find out who's been spotted with Spot, chowing with her chow, and shopping for Gucci with their Poochie. Get the scoop on all the latest celebrity pet patter right here. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome back to Rappaport to the Rescue. I'm Jill Rappaport, and as I said in my intro, and I got to embarrass you a little bit, Ben, I told our audience I have a little bit of a crush on you. I have Ben Mankiewicz with us now from Turner Classic Movies. And I have to tell you, I'm not alone. When I told my girlfriends I was doing this interview and they said, oh, he is so adorable. I bet you get that a lot.
Well, what I usually get is is somebody like you coming up to me and saying at first, if you're Ben Mankiewicz, right? Or are you Ben Mankiewicz? I'm like, yeah, that's right. I'm feeling all kind of haughty. And then they're like, oh my God, my mother loves you. That's generally how it plays out, but it's great. I'm always into it. It's amazing to work at a place like TCM that really matters, that means something in people's lives. I mean, you know, TV can be a fairly silly business, and, you know, what we do resonates with people. It like, connects them to their family in meaningful ways, connects them to their friends and their past. And I don't know, it's pretty great. I feel really fortunate.
Well, you've been there, I believe, since 2002? Is that
three? Yeah, 2003. Yeah, so you're in the right there. It's 21 plus years.
Wow. You don't realize how long that's been.
Yeah, I mean, I got this job. I got to LA in 2001. I've been a local news reporter, which, of course, you're deeply familiar with, and I didn't want to do that anymore. And I basically didn't work for a year and a half. And I was probably 6 weeks at the most from trying to go back to local news. Hopefully I'd land a station here in LA because I wanted to stay here. But I mean, I could have easily ended up in Cleveland or Dallas or San Antonio, you know, anywhere that would hire me. Cincinnati, where I once turned a job down to stay in Charleston. And then I got this TCM job. So it felt like a job to me when I got it. Like, oh, great, I finally landed a job. And then it's turned into, you know, really what defines my entire career. And in 2 years, less than 2 years, when I crossed 23 years, you know, I've been there longer than Robert Osborne was, who signed the station on the air in 1994. And that's staggering to me.
Well, what's amazing is your diehard followers. And I know because I'm one of them, but especially this time of year, like you said, it's a feel-good channel. And all of the hosts, including you, obviously, but you have a whole wonderful roster of people.
We do, yeah.
The information that each one gives and the history behind these movies is so fascinating to me, the facts that you give.
I love hearing that, man. It's really amazing. A number of people, everybody stops me and they just have a story about why it matters to them. And frequently it's an incredibly moving story about, you know, spending the last 6 months of their mother's life going home to live with their mom to help her through an illness that took her life. And then saying all we did all day was connect and watch Turner Classic Movies. And it's the best 6 months I ever spent with, you know, and you're like, and then they start to cry. It's really an experience to have people care about this channel so much. And I'm super lucky to get here because, you know, it's really the movies that do the connecting. So.
Well, and besides this job, this gig, you're also on my favorite show, CBS Sunday Morning. I see you do wonderful profiles on there. That is my dream job. You really do have the best two gigs in television.
I'm really fortunate. And that CBS Sunday Morning came really because of TCM. Some crossover in the audience there, and they'd seen me do a couple things on TCM, and they knew I had a journalism background, and they called to do one piece, and it went well. And, you know, and I do, you know, whatever, but I do somewhere between 7 and 10 a year, but there's no set number. They just call when they feel like there's a good matchup. And I'm also super busy, but I'm thrilled every time I did. I did two earlier, just a few weeks ago. I did back-to-back weeks at Kathy Bates and Al Pacino, and I was really proud of both those pieces.
Well, you know, I was on the red carpet many decades of my career and interviewed a lot of the same celebrities that you have. And it's an interesting job to have because it's a fine line. I never use notes, Ben. I never look down because I found that if you break eye contact, you lose them. And I've watched the way you interview, very casual, relaxed. You can tell that you have the information, you know their background, but it's really a true conversation.
Well, that's what you're going for. That's certainly the goal. I'm trying to find, yeah, here, I got a notebook here. So like, I think it's somewhere in here. During Kathy Bates, because I bring her up, which was a really, you know, that moment went viral because of something that happened in the middle of the interview, which we were able to not correct her on, but point out something that she thought she had not thanked her mother when she won the Oscar.
Of course, that was everywhere.
Yeah, and it was really great. So, but earlier in that conversation, in part because my notes here, I'll just show you, this is a rant, not her, but this is, and I know this, people can't see this, but my notes look like this. Like they're like, I mean, there's,
wow,
there's 700 words on a page and it's a big notebook. So during the interview with Kathy Bates, and she was really into it, but she said about herself, she's a very serious person, right? She's like, I should probably try to be less serious. And she was really looking forward to this interview and she was into it. We were clearly connecting and she was talking about things that really mattered to her. And at one point she said something which took us in a different direction. And I really wanted to finish what we had just been talking about. And I knew I needed a detail. And I looked down and I couldn't find it because I got 700 words on the page. I couldn't even find it. And in the middle of talking, as I looked down to your point about breaking eye contact, she said, are you listening? Right? Are you listening to me? And I, thankfully, I was able to repeat what she had just said. And I said, which was true. I was like, no, I'm totally listening to you. I just wanted to remember one thing that you had just said that triggered something. So I looked down, but I can't find it anyway. And it didn't tell me that she was mad. It told me that she was into it. Like she was really vested in it. And then about 20 minutes later, she said the thing about her mother had been sort of snide about her winning the Oscar for Misery. And she said, I think she was angry because I didn't thank her. And the interview was in the afternoon. And that morning I had watched her Oscar acceptance speech. So it was right in the front. And I said, you know, you did thank her. And she said, no, I didn't check the tape. Again, she was stern. I never thought she was mad at me. She's just like, I like it, right? She's just
matter of fact.
Matter of fact. And I said, and I wasn't going to argue with her. I looked at our producer and he looked at me like the same way, like she definitely thanked her. And then he brought the phone over when we had to change the, you know, battery on the camera, but 10 minutes later, and we showed it to her and she just had this amazing, amazing reaction. It was such a wonderful thing to be a part of. And I honestly feel like she and I are friends. And she came on TCM like 3 weeks later because it had, you know, gone so well and talked about movies she loved. So
I think that you gave her such wonderful closure for something that has bothered her, obviously, for decades. You made her heart full and took away the hole that she thought, how could I not thank my mother?
Yeah, right? No, it clearly mattered to her. And it's just this weird thing that happens with these movies and that people, they care, you know, and it matters to them. And again, even though this wasn't TCM, it's still like, that's exactly what we do, is connect parents to children, even if the parents are long gone, right? You watch one of these movies and you think, this is either a movie my mom loved or my dad loved, or this is the world that they grew up in. This is what they saw, and you feel connected to them, and that matters.
But you have a certain style about you. I feel that these actors feel you're one of them. You remind me, younger, of a James Lipton actor studio. You know, he would get the best interviews because they respected him so much. And I see that same connection in all of your interviews.
Well, you know, I'm very honored that you said that. And who pointed that? The only other people who've pointed that out to me, it's happened twice in my life. And it was, you're the second, but it was a bunch of people at one time that was when I did a piece on the actor studio. And the people at the actor studio were like, you know who you remind us of is James, even though I'm not an actor. And he was. But it was really nice. I love actors. What we do, hosting, and you do red carpets. I hate doing red carpet interviews.
Oh, I do.
I don't like any interview that's shorter than an hour. I mean, I like, that's what I want to do is, you know, get into it with people. And, you know, and they're in a different frame of mind. They're not really going to reveal any part of themselves.
Yeah. And it's like an assembly line. They've got to go from one to another.
That's right. Yeah. You know, they're moving down. You know, other people are coming. You know, they're going to tell the same story because they, I mean, I do it the few times that I've been on the other end of red carpets. Like you realize, well, I just said the same thing to six straight people, you know? So it's hard. Like, this is a strange, weird job, and to be able to manage to connect in a meaningful way. But anyway, so I just met with and going for these jobs, you know, it's these hosting jobs. It's like, I went through a process of not getting a ton of jobs in that year and a half that I was only like working freelance here and there for places. And I just realized, I guess what should have been obvious is what actors go through to get jobs auditioning. I mean, it's humiliating, you know, I mean, it's just one. And the humiliation is direct. It's like they look at you and your face and they're like, you know, Jill, thanks for coming in, but we're not really into your eyes and your nose and your mouth and the way they are together and your hair and the way you sound. But otherwise, thanks.
You're not really thinking that, are you, Ben?
No, I'm saying that that's how it always felt to me. Like, no, but I mean, the rejection is, it's a full rejection when you don't get things. It's like, we don't like your face and the way you talk and how your arms are. You know, it's like this very, you know, it just wears you down, but they get up there and they sort of give themselves everything. So I now feel bad because you apparently didn't take rejection as badly as I did, but I felt it acutely.
I did, but you know what? I don't think they ever had the ball to say that to me. I just assume they just thought I was older. They don't tell you that either.
No, I'm making that up. Nobody says that, but that's what I heard. Like because the rejection is always personal, right? It's don't like the thing that you bring. No, of course, nobody ever said, Ben, we don't like your face.
Well, you know what I did, Ben? I would get rejected or start to get rejected, and I would not take no for an answer. I would say, well, wait a minute. Let me show you this. Let me show you what I can do. And I turned around two jobs where they really weren't that into me, and I wore them down.
That's great. And the mere act of doing that, that also tells them something about you, right? Sort of your doggedness, to provide a nice segue to what we're going to get into. And this is a relentless person, which is valuable in that field. So yeah, that's good. I didn't do that. I shrank away. Yeah.
You're obviously, it's done well for you. And, you know, the other thing that's so distinctive about you is your voice. Okay. And your brother, who I worked with
for many years at WCBS in New York,
Josh Mankiewicz, who's, you know, one of the great stars of Dateline, he also has such a distinguished Mankiewicz voice, the two of you.
Well, we do a lot of podcasting now, and I did do some radio for a while, and I love radio, and that's why I like podcasts, because it's, you know, it's radio, basically. But yeah, my brother and I, we sound a little bit alike, but he has a slightly more nasal tone, because when we talk to police, they told us a very different story. There were times when I was working in Miami, and I would go in to track a piece, and I would get into the studio, and I would just start, you know, when Jill Rappaport woke up this morning, it was not the day she expected. I was like, oh my God, I sound like my brother, you know? And, also everything I've learned about TV and most of what I've learned about life came from my brother, who's Earth's greatest big brother.
And he's so smart. I mean, I used to go to him. He'd make fun of me. I was the entertainment reporter. Of course, Josh was in the trenches, the newsman. And, you know, he'd walk by, what's happening in Hollywood today, and kind of laugh at me. But we had so much fun working together. And your whole family, I mean, you come from incredible lineage. You really do.
I'm very fortunate, very proud of my family's history in Hollywood and mostly in politics. You know, I grew up, Josh was born in L.A. because Josh is a much, 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 much older person. And but I grew up in D.C. and my father was a kind of a big deal in Democratic politics, and everybody recognized my dad. So I just thought he was the Hollywood connection, his father and his uncle, Herman Mankiewicz and Joe Mankiewicz. I just thought they were I thought that my dad was the main person, right? Like, right. He was the star, but really the politics was the offshoot, the original show. We were the spinoff politics, but the original show was, of course, politics and my grandfather Herman and my great uncle Joe.
Were they proud? And I assume, how could they not be? But, you know, you took a different route and they might have looked at it as more fluff, right?
Joe died a little before I started at TCM, and Herman died long before. Herman, as the movie Mank depicted, he drank himself largely to death. And in part because he was ashamed of what he did, that writing these movies, and he wrote Citizen Kane, but these movies were not substantive, and that the real work of a writer or a thinker, of an intellectual, which he certainly was that, it's funny, in this world, you could certainly write a play or write the great American novel or teach. Their father always wanted Joe to teach, because that's what he'd done. But you could be even a theater critic. Like, that was thought of as a noble profession. But writing these nonsense popcorn filler for the masses, that was junk. And that's what Herman and Joe heard from their father again and again. Joe had a sense of humor about it. I'm not sure Herman did, even though Herman had a great wit. But Joe used to say about his father, he's like, yeah, he doesn't think the movies are a worthwhile way to make a living, but he sure likes the yacht he likes to visit the yacht that the movies bought. Whereas Herman was just sort of tortured by it.
Wow.
And that was one. If I, you know, when everybody asked me, if you go back in time, you know, who would you, I could go back, I'd meet my grandfather and I'd tell him, you're wrong. Your work matters. These movies matter to people.
Oh, just think how proud he would be of you, seeing what you're doing and how many lives you touch with these wonderful movies and talking about them.
I think Herman would think like, wait a minute, so let me understand this. So they pay you to talk about other people's movies? And then you sort of get credit for those movies. And I'd be like, that's right. That's what happens. He'd be like, well, that's impressive. That is. Yeah. Well done. Yeah.
Were you a movie buff when you were young? I mean, you have to not only know all about them and watch every movie, but do you love movies? Is this in your blood?
Oh, I love movies. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I loved going to the movies. I was a kid who loved movies. I probably loved movies more than most of my friends growing up, but I don't think they wouldn't have described me in that way. I loved going. I loved seeing movies, but I didn't study them. I couldn't imagine having any kind of career related to them. I started to think about them differently in college. And then still, I just couldn't imagine that there would be a career like this. And then by the time I was super into them, by the time I got the job at TCM, but I didn't understand even the world I was getting into at first. Like, I thought that my learning curve would be minimal, and it turned out to be steep. But it happened pretty quick. I took it seriously. So
you're in LA and you've got your beautiful wife and your daughter and your rescue dogs. And of course, we're going to get into that in a moment. But are you hobnobbing with the stars? Will I see you at all the happening restaurants? Are you at all the premieres? What's your normal life like in LA?
I was a movie critic for a while. I was terrible at it and I didn't really like it. I liked many of the other critics. I liked making friends with them, but I never felt comfortable with literally criticizing a movie.
Yeah.
I just didn't, you know, I mean, I feel more comfortable with it at TCM because I, you know, I sort of get that, hey, man, you don't have to take me seriously. I'm just telling you sometimes, you know, and I only acknowledge what's universally thought to be great. And if I say something's not good, it's usually still fun. Right.
Right.
So, and also the people who made it are long gone, but I just don't like that. I'm not good at it. And I felt like I was imitating a critic all the time. I've started saying that in a lot of interviews, but I really feel it. Like I was saying the things that I guess I had heard other critics say, and it didn't sound like me. I'm like, I don't think I talk like this. Like, and every bit of success I've had on television has been because I'm playing myself. Right.
You're authentic.
I am authentic. And then I was able to really kind of get that in when I moved from Charleston as a reporter to Miami as a reporter and then host of a kind of very different kind of news show we did there. And that let me have just be me. And I was like, now all of a sudden this just got easy.
So is that your way of telling me that you don't hobnob with the stars?
So I don't go to premieres. That's true. I mean, I hobnob with stars because I just put together a reel for something that I was pitching. And I was like, you know, putting in these interviews and the connections that I had with, you know, Harrison Ford and Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg, Kathy Bates, I used, and Al Pacino. But, you know, like I interview them and I'm sort of, we just had this week a podcast dropped with Jason Reitman. And it was an amazing conversation with me and Jason about movies and how much we love movies, but how much we love our fathers too. And, you know, we both lost our fathers. I mean, we're grown men, that happens. And his father, Ivan Reitman, the director. And I just, like, I connected with him in such a meaningful way. I can't believe we're not friends. And it's not like we're not. And I probably could, if I reached out and said, you want to have dinner, we might be able to have dinner. But I finished with Tom Hanks and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be Tom Hanks's best friend. And then it occurs to you about 45 minutes later, oh wait, he has friends. Like he's like, he doesn't really need me to be his best friend. So there's some people I've interviewed and connected with who I would call my friends. No question. Elliot Gould springs right to mind, and you know, Angie Dickinson. And then I've made some other friends who are, you know, relatively famous. But basically, no, I don't hobnob. I don't go to restaurants. My closest friends are still the idiots I went to high school with, you know.
And Josh, your brother, I can't imitate him.
Yeah. Josh is a pretty good friend too. You know, as you get older.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, first of all, when I heard you had the rescue dogs, I thought, oh, gotta love Ben Mankiewicz. Those dogs, and when we talked about it in our phone conversation a few weeks ago, and you were telling me how they've changed your life and touched your family's life and how they add so much to your life. And this is the time of the year. My whole open is about how dire the situation is right now, especially this time of year when so many animals are dumped. Tell me what your rescue doggies mean to you.
I'm sure everybody says this, but it's not just a line. I mean, they're part of the family. We have three of them now. We added the third one about 8 months ago. Under my feet right now is the queen of the house, Bob Mankiewicz, a girl named Bob. And Bobby is, you know, she's 12. She's a shepherd rescue. She's definitely slowing down, but she's doing great. And we had her, and then we got another dog, and he's been a pain in the ass. Like, you know, we have to acknowledge sometimes it's not the greatest fit ever, but it's 6 years and he loves us and we put up with him. And, you know, he like kind of ruins things at the park all the time. And he's a grouch. He doesn't know it. Then as soon as you tell him no, he's like, oh, I'm sorry. What did I do? And then I just didn't want that dog to be 50% of our dogs. That dog's name is Bunk, named for the character on The Wire, Wendell Pierce's character on The Wire, because they told us he was a Chesapeake Bay Retriever, a Maryland dog. But like, he's half pit bull and something else. Like, he's not Chesapeake Bay Retriever. There's no Chesapeake Bay Retrievers in shelters in Los Angeles. And so I just thought, I think we need him to be 33% of our dogs and not 50% of our dogs. So we adopted another dog. It was sort of a surprise for my wife and daughter. My wife and I had talked about it. So, but I mean, we're like in between houses and fixing up a house, and life is incredibly hectic. She works on East Coast hours in LA. So she's up at 5 a.m. You know, like, hey, here's a third dog, might not have gone over so well. And I'm not sure it did at first, but the dog was so beautiful and so wonderful that I was saying to her, like, hey, look, if we can't handle it, like if we take this dog back to the shelter today, he'll get adopted today. Like, she's a beautiful, wonderful, sweet animal, and she'll go like that, as she did.
And now I bet your wife would give up you before she would give up the dog.
100%. I mean, oh, that happened within, like, she was like, we're not giving the dog up, I'm just irritated. And then by the next day she's like, I'm not irritated anymore, I love her so much.
But there really is something to be said. I mean, I don't have human children. I have all my, as I call them, my fur angels surrounding me. They're looking at me right now too. And I've got my horses out in the pastures. And they really, during COVID, when we couldn't be near humans, I never felt lonely, Ben. I really didn't. Yeah. I just had them, and I never, even when you're sad and depressed, and we all go through that, I look at them and it's just like lifted, right?
Yeah, my previous dog, Rookie, who's the greatest dog. Sorry, Baba. You're close. You're so close.
Yeah. Cover the ears.
Thankfully, she can't really hear, and she doesn't care. She's like, hey, man, I am what I am. She's very, yeah. Yeah, all four of our dogs, but Rookie more than any, it was the first animal I'd had who always knew my mood. I mean, it was just amazing, you know, and I'd come down after a frustrating day, I'd sigh, and wherever that dog was, I'd sigh, that dog came over and, you know, put his head on my lap, like, what do I need to do? And then I'd get, you know, I watch a lot of, I'm a huge sports fan. I gamble and I, you know, get a little irritated and Rookie would be like, I'm going upstairs. Not into this. Like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, no, it was good. It was good, Rookie. And he'd be like, see you later. Yeah.
Taking the cue. I'm off.
I'd bring Rookie to play. I played softball a lot. I would love to again. It's getting old, but, and we was in a league in Santa Monica. It was like slow pitch, you know, an idiot league, but, and we played league C minus, give you an idea of how top tier we were. But I'd bring Rookie because I was like, oh, it's great. A bunch of guys sitting around. I put the dog in the car. Rookie always loved to take a ride anywhere, put him in the car. But Rookie at softball, like he'd tie him to a fence, the field, and he would turn his back to play. Like he didn't like it because it was men emotional. You know, they'd hit him and be, oh, and all the things that like he associated with me yelling at the TV, you know, because I couldn't get a backdoor cover on the line. It was too much for him. Yeah. He wouldn't even get out of the car. That's all.
I love that name, Rookie. I might have to steal that for my next rescue.
Steal away. My favorite baseball player had one great season his rookie year. So I've named a couple of dogs after variations of Mitchell Page. Yeah.
Well, these are such great stories and such a great message to our audience all over the world about taking in these wonderful creatures and how they really do rescue us.
Even the stuff that you don't want to do, the cleaning up after them and taking them to even this morning, like they somehow were outside playing and it didn't even rain, but somehow the sprinkler went off. Anyway, two of them came in incredibly muddy and they like ran through the house and they tracked the mud through. And I don't know. Yes, it was a pain in the ass, but I was like, oh, you just, I don't know. You're like looking after them. Like you clean up, even when you have to pick up after them, I always think I'm taking care of them. I'm taking care of things. You know, this is my job. And I never, big picture, of course, in moments you might get irritated, but big picture, it has made me a better person. There's just no question. A more thoughtful person and a more patient person, and I'm definitely, you know, and a more loving person and a much better caretaker for humans because I take care of these guys.
Oh, well, that is such a wonderful endorsement for everyone to be a perfect pet parent and to want to go out and rescue an animal right now. Oh, Ben, I can't thank you enough. I know you have to run to a very important engagement downtown LA, and I know the traffic there, so we're not going to keep you any longer. But Ben Mankiewicz, Turner Classic Movies, wonderful animal advocate, great voice. I do have a crush on you. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on Rappaport to the Rescue. This was just great.
Well, great, Jill, and I hope we can figure something out between you and the organization and TCM too. Be great. So thanks.
That will be wonderful. And happy and healthy holidays to you and your beautiful family on two and four legs.
Yeah, you as well. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you. And thank you all for joining us today on this very special edition of Rappaport to the Rescue.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.